Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
I'm fond of saying it. I'm going to say it again. Fridays always seem to arrive in the nick of time. Thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here, Newsline PM, on this Friday afternoon. June 15th, 2012. Yeah, let's take a step back in the Wayback Machine. Appreciate your hooking up and hanging with me here. As you heard Nancy mention, Stephen Powell is going to be sentenced today. I think that's scheduled for 1:30 this afternoon. Prosecutors looking for the exceptional sentence. The defense attorneys hoping that the judge will use guidelines from 2006. The difference there, here's what the difference is. If he's given the exceptional sentence, which is the prosecutors, I think, looking for 10 years, that's about double the standard range that he would normally receive. But if the judge buys into the spurious argument presented by the defense attorney that you can't really tell when the pictures that Stephen Powell has been convicted of taking, that you can't tell when those pictures were taken, he wants the assumption that they were taken prior to the sentencing guidelines change, which would be back in 2006, which would mean Powell would then get a sentence of like no more than a year, and given time served, could walk out today. Raise your hand if you think the judge is that delusional. Yeah, that's what I thought. Joining me here this afternoon, Ann C.D. Bremner, the C.D. for Clarence Darrow, because she channels the powerful, all-encompassing knowledge of the law represented by Clarence Darrow. How are you, Annie?
What a wonderful intro. Thank you, Ken. And I'm going to start calling you Edward R. Murrow.
No. Hey, so now, just so that everyone's aware, Ann represents the Cox family, Susan Powell Cox. Or Susan Cox Powell, excuse me, and also represents the two girls that Stephen Powell was convicted of taking those photos of. So, Annie, your best guess, this judge, there's no way on God's great green wonderful earth that he's going to pay any attention to the defense request that the sentencing guidelines from 2006 be used, is there?
Boy, I sure hope not. And I don't see a basis to do that. And frankly, for Stephen Powell, you know, to walk free today, there'd be nothing right in the world. I mean, it would just be completely outrageous. And the fact of the matter is, even if the judge decides, you know what, these are unranked offenses, I'll go with this argument that, you know, this 2006 argument of using them as unranked, as opposed to having ranges under the Sentencing Reform Act, you know, higher ranges, the judge can still impose an exceptional sentence of 10 years.
Well, I'd like to see him get whatever is possible. And I wouldn't mind seeing the judge going out on a limb and putting something up for challenge, but he's probably going to play it safe and give him within, you know, maybe a little bit more than the standard sentencing range.
You know, and something we haven't talked about in a while is that potentially if these were consecutively served sentences on the 14 counts of voyeurism, he could be looking at 77 years. You know, it's significantly more than even this exceptional sentence would allow.
So looming in the wings here is your representation of these two girls, mm-hmm. because my understanding is, you know, the little bird on my shoulder has told me that you're probably going to be presenting Powell today you're going to serve him with a civil lawsuit.
I am.
I would love to see his face.
Well, I know, but I hope I don't get arrested, but yeah, I'm going to do it.
So what are you putting in motion there?
Well, a couple of things, Ken. First is that, of course, there's a suit against him for damages from the girls. He has a house. It's potential homeowner's insurance, you know, exposure. Because they do have damages. They do have psychological distress. We all have a right to privacy. It's important. And, of course, they were photographed in ways their significant others when they're adults will probably never see. You know, it was so, you know, offensive and invasive. But the second thing I'm doing is I'm allowed to get the records of the Josh Powell investigation, potentially from West Valley City Police, and the Pierce County investigation of Josh Powell and Stephen Powell, once I file this case today, serve it and file it from Pierce County.
See, that's why you are one of the best legal minds in the area.
I'm
serious. I love the way that you can configure within the law to serve a dual purpose here, because so many people, including the Cox family, believe that Stephen Powell has more information pertaining to the disappearance of Susan, or to mm-hmm. her death. And yes. I like the way that you have configured this, that you will then have access to all the evidence from the West Valley City Police, from the Pierce County. I mean, I just think that's brilliant.
Well, thank you. You've made my whole month, Ken. Thank you.
So
I feel it's an important thing to do here, and we're just trying to get at the truth. And these families actually are working together. They want to find Susan.
So now what would you theoretically be able to do with that additional information?
Well, I can hire my own investigators. I can ask that there be further investigation by the police here in Pierce County and in West Valley. You know, there's all kinds of information that we got from that unsealed search warrant. Remember back when, you know, Susan's blood in the house,
right.
The note saying, if something happened to me, he killed me. You know, the $3.5 million he took out in life insurance, you know, that's a motive to kill right there. And there's probably a lot more bombshells in there that we can follow up on. And Chuck's ex-law enforcement, he's going to help too. So it's not just asking law enforcement to do it or an independent agency to do it. We want to know too, and we'll keep going, you know, until we find her and we find out what happened in this case. It's a horribly tragic case that deserves, this family deserves answers, but this whole community deserves answers.
So do you expect that there could be an adequate amount of information to put the right type of pressure on the West Valley Police Department, the city police department back there, to actually file charges against Stephen Powell?
Yes. Well, potentially. I don't want to say yes. Potentially, yes.
See, I'll say yes because, I'll say yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You can say,
okay.
Yeah, I'll be the lawyer speak over here. You don't have potentially and allegedly, but there's enough, you know, that he went there at the time of the camping trip, that he was obsessed with Susan. The pre-sentence report says that he wrote about her in his journal every day, every entry. There's more information that's going to come out today from that report about his obsession with her. And then there's also information about a van that he had that may have had some evidence in it that we've got to follow up on. And I don't know what else is there, but they've called him a person of interest. There was one AP report where they called him a suspect.
Well, and this is going to be an odd question. Are Susan's parents really okay with this? I know how desperately they want to find out
okay,
what happened
what?
To their... Are Susan's parents really okay with this?
What?
Because the reason I ask that is that this is going to extend everything for an indefinite period of time. They've been through so much already. Are they aware that they're going to be going through so much more? I guess we lost Annie. I'm just my only issue is that I feel like Susan's parents have just endured so much, and I don't know if they're necessarily cognizant of how much more they will have to go through. I think we got Annie back. Hi, Ann. Are you there? No, we don't have her. Let's try this. Okay, never mind. Try one more time. Annie? All right. My issue is whether or not these parents are going to be able to understand everything that's unfolding in front of them. And that's all I worry about right now. And by the way, when the sentencing takes place, it's scheduled for 1:30 this afternoon. We'll be keeping you updated on that and give you the information as soon as possible. In a moment, the Boy Scouts facing a scandal and the release of some files that they fought not to have released. Hang with us.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So yesterday, the Oregon Supreme Court approved the release of what some have been calling perversion files compiled by the Boy Scouts of America. And this is dealing with suspected child molesters within the organization. It's 20,000 pages of material on something akin to about files on about 1,200 people. And these were files that were gathered from 1965 to 1985. Also found out that really the Boy Scouts have been trying to keep, aware that there's the possibility of child molesters within their ranks, have kept what they used to call cards on men who were thought to be unfit to supervise boys. And that was begun back in like 1935 or something. Right now, we're going to talk with Deanne Yamamoto, who is the deputy executive director of the King County Sexual Assault Resource Center. Thanks for being here again, Deanne.
Happy to be here.
Here's my question. My question is, do you think it's appropriate for an organization like the Boy Scouts to look into the background of these men and never contact authorities when they find someone that they feel is suspect or unfit to serve in their organization. In other words, they do a little bit of an investigation, but they never turn over their findings to authorities.
Well, it's interesting not knowing the details, but in some ways, I suppose one person could spin that as a positive thing that they're doing, because there are certainly things that they might want to keep record of that don't rise to the criminal level or don't rise to suspicion enough, but they're wanting to be diligent about who they're hiring or who they're putting in charge of youth. Because the reality is, you know, it's not about the Boy Scouts. It's about sex offenders wanting to gravitate to where kids are. And so that's a likely organization. And so as they become more aware that this is sort of an offender strategy, they certainly would want to be vigilant about something. So I don't know what's in those files, but it's possible it doesn't rise to the criminal level, or it's possible a child's never made a disclosure, but maybe it's somebody who, you know, lacks boundaries.
Yeah.
And so they want to record that.
I'm not trying to find fault with the Boy Scouts. I'm like you. I think there's certainly a level of appreciation that they are diligent. And I can understand, you know, the desire for them to keep names private, because even an allegation along the lines of being a child molester or a pedophile is enough to ruin somebody. And, you know, they're not a court of law. You know what I'm saying?
Right, absolutely.
So I understand that. But there's a certain level of it seems like they're watching out for the organization as much as they are watching out for the safety and the well-being of the scouts themselves, is what I'm getting a sense of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's certainly a possibility. And an organization like that is more vulnerable than other organizations just because they have so many children. I mean, their organization is about children. And so with the litigious nature that we are serving under, too, I think that they, you know, there's wisdom in that as well. There's wisdom in documenting these things. And also, the organization's quite large, and so they need sort of a large-scale way of communicating that or of housing information like that. So I don't see all bad in it. I see some vigilance in there that could be good responsibility, quite frankly.
Well, and the reason I got sidetracked a little bit is, you know, all of this comes from this lawsuit that was, awarded a person who was molested by an assistant scoutmaster in the early 80s. He got $18.5 million from the scouts his suit contended that they didn't protect him. So I'm wondering, and they didn't want to release the documents. So, and give, like you so aptly put it, you know, the Boy Scouts are one of the magnets for people who do want to associate with kids for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, you know.
Yeah, and I guess there's a tipping point. I mean, there's a point where collecting information is one thing, but what is the tipping point? When do you report, or when do you take action that's beyond keeping a file about a person? When do you just say you are not fit for this organization? And it might be that's exactly why they have that file. So they don't want them being in Beaverton and then going to another city and trying to get involved in the organization as well. I don't know enough about the specifics, but that kind of information, they're also within the organization, needs to be a point of, and when it gets to this point, this is when we report, or this is when we take action.
Absolutely.
That's more than just keeping a file.
All right, Deanne Yamamoto, the Deputy Executive Director, King County Sexual Assault Resource Center. Thank you very much. It's always good to get a sense of things from you. You have put things in great perspective. Thanks, Deanne.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
All right, hang with us. Newsline PM continues.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
So, effective immediately. I mean, this is like instantaneous. Young immigrants who came into the United States before they were 16 years old will be allowed to stay here, will be allowed to apply for work permits. And the conditions are just as long as you have no criminal history, you've resided continuously in the U.S. for at least 5 years, and you have to, as I say, been here before you turned 16. The thing of it is, and I've tried to find this, but I'm pretty sure that it doesn't allow these individuals to apply for citizenship. Though you can have the status of work, the work status is renewable, But I don't think citizenship is part of the deal that's going on here. We'll find out in a moment as we talk with Jorge Barone, who's with the Northwest Immigration Rights Project. Hi, Jorge.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I appreciate your being here. So does this allow, am I correct in saying that the provision specifically says you're not allowed to use this as a path to citizenship, or am I incorrect there?
No, you are correct. This announcement is only going to grant people a temporary form of, you know, it's not even really immigration status. It's just basically granting them temporary protection so that they won't be deported and so they'll be able to get a work permit. But in order for them to actually be on a path to citizenship and have permanent status here, that's going to require congressional action. So that would require the passage of the DREAM Act, which is something that we've been calling for a number of years, and hopefully that will still be a change that will happen even besides this announcement.
Okay, so this then is the extent of the or the limit of the president's ability to even accommodate this much. He statutorily can't go any further then, correct?
Well, he can't go further in terms of granting people additional status and permanent status for them to be able to actually live here as permanent residents and eventually apply for citizenship. I mean, he can grant this kind of form of temporary status to a broader group of people, but he's chosen to, focus on this particular group, which of course, everybody thinks is, a lot of people think are the most compelling cases.
Well, and this is for kids who have been here, who've gone to school here. Maybe they've graduated high school, maybe they've graduated college, maybe they've served in the U.S. military. Those are the people that are specifically targeted and will be prevented from being deported.
That's right. And I think one of the good things about this is that, the administration, of course, has already made announcements about, prosecutorial discretion, and they were looking at individual cases. But this is actually going to apply to a much broader group, and it's clear that, people who meet these very specific criteria are going to be eligible to apply for this temporary status, at least, even before they get into the deportation process, which is something that we had called for, because, part of the weird dynamic on this is that was happening before this announcement was that, people who are not in deportation proceedings were saying, well, I can't access, work authorization. I can't, know what my status is. And so this will give at least those people some temporary status so that they can continue contributing as they have been, but be more fully engaged in our community. So I think it's a welcome development. It's not a solution by any means to the problems with our immigration system, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
So let me ask you, though, is there what I would call a backdoor uh-oh to this? And the uh-oh is that it is incumbent on these people to prove that they were brought here before they turned 16. It's incumbent on them to show that they've been in the country for at least 5 continuous years. So how do they go about that? Because if their parents brought them here, do they need their parents their uncle or whatever, some relative, to validate the criteria that will allow them to stay? Does then that put the parents in jeopardy of deportation?
Well, I think those are some of the questions that we're still trying to sort out. I mean, the announcement today was kind of the framework, and the administration has not actually released the details on how the process is actually going to work. And believe me, Ken, we do the immigration legal services for low-income people, and so I can tell you we've gotten, hundreds of calls just this morning asking us very much the same similar kinds of questions. So we're going to learn over the coming weeks, is what the administration said, exactly what the path is going to be, the process to actually get this implemented. But obviously those are going to be some of the points that we're going to raise with the administration, that it's very important that people have a way to apply that is not going to put them or their families in an additional risk, because that's obviously going to deter people from coming forward. So I think it will be, you know, a process where people are obviously going to have to show some documentation about the fact that they've been here. We're hoping that it accounts for the realities that when you're in undocumented status, you obviously are not going to have a lot of documentation necessarily. So those are the things that we're going to have to work on the next several weeks.
I mean, I could see where school records would be readily available. And if obviously they would have to be, they would most likely be attending school prior to their 16th birthday. So that might, I'm hoping that would be enough to do that, because as you mentioned, I mean, the jeopardy that you would potentially put your parents or your uncle or your aunt or your grandparents in by having to have them say, well, yes, you know, he was brought across, you know, in 2001, 6 months old or whatever. But, you know, then you have the immigration people saying, fine, you can stay. You're going to be deported because you're not here legally. You're undocumented. So there's some details here that are big time missing.
Right. And that's what, you know, it's important for the community members to be, you know, getting good information about this, because unfortunately what we also see is that when there's this kind of announcement, you know, there's a lot of people who try to take advantage of the fact that there's some uncertainty about things. And, you know, we'll try to prey on people by saying, you know, if you pay me this money, I'll help you with the application, when there hasn't actually been an application put forth yet for the administration. So it is important for people to get, you know, good, solid advice to make sure that this is not going to put them at greater risk. But like I said, you know, we do think this is a positive development, even though I absolutely agree that it raises a lot of difficult questions as well.
And I think it's the right thing to do, but I've got to look at the – just because I tend to have a streak of cynicism that runs through me, thinking, okay, thank you, President Obama, as we are 145 days away from the presidential election, how much of this is politically motivated and how much of this is altruistic, and does it really make a difference?
Well, I do think it makes a difference. I mean, I can tell you that we've already talked to young people this morning who were, you know, who are thrilled, because for them, those individuals, well, again, you know, there's still a process that they're going to have to go through. There's going to be, you know, literally, you know, thousands, certainly here in Washington, but, you know, hundreds of thousands around the country who are going to benefit from this, who are likely to benefit from this. And so I think that this is important for those individuals. Again, you know, it's not a solution. It is a temporary fix to a particular problem with our immigration system. But, you know, it's better to better late than never in terms of having a temporary fix. And again, we need to continue to redouble our efforts to make sure that the greater issue of immigration reform gets tackled by Congress.
Yep, and I think this perhaps will help push that issue forward a little bit faster. Jorge Barón with the Northwest Immigration Rights Project, thank you. It's always good talking to you, man.
Thank you, Ken, for having me on.
All right, take care. And to you we go with the question of how this strikes you. Let me give you the phone numbers, 206-421-1000. The toll-free number for you is 877-397-COMO. That's 877-397-5666. Do you think the president has made the right move on this? That's what we're going to tackle.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So here's what we've got, effective immediately. You've got young immigrants who arrived in this country before they turned 16 and are no older than 30, by the way. They are younger than 30, have been in the country for at least 5 continuous years, have no criminal history, graduated from high school or earned a GED or served in the military, can apply for a work permit that'll be good for 2 years, and then there are no limits whatsoever on how many times that work permit can be renewed. But the policy itself will not lead toward citizenship. That's what the president is putting into play today. And look, it's a political move. I mean, there's no question about that, but I agree with this, and I have no problem with the president using it as a political tool. Help swing Hispanic voters in, you know, Nevada and Florida and such. So, but the question is what you think of it. 206-421-1000. That's the local line. The toll-free number for you is 877-397-5666. 5666. We'll start out here with Linda in Linwood. What do you say? You're up on Newsline PM.
Hi, I'm on speakerphone. Can you hear me okay still?
Yeah, sure can hear you.
I don't agree with any of this stuff, grandfathering anyone or letting anyone in have privileges in this country that should not be here at all in the first place. These kinds of things are a slap in the face to the immigrants that have jumped through the hoops with immigration, gotten their visas legally like they're supposed to, and have gone through all the trials and tribulations to become residents here and eventually citizens. It is a slap in the face.
All right, so let me ask you, Linda, because, and keep in mind, here's what we're primarily talking about. We're primarily talking about children who were brought here as, you know, little babies or infants who were brought here when they were 3 or 4 or 5 years old, who've lived their entire lives here, have gone to school, you know, gotten their high school diploma. Maybe there are instances in which, you know, we're talking about college graduates, people who can and will contribute to American society. Why punish those children is, I guess, what I'm asking you.
It's not a punishment. It's their parents' fault that they're in these situations. Their parents had the opportunity to come here legally. The sins shall befall of the parents shall befall on the children. I believe that's somewhere how it's in the Bible. I'm not real religious, but I'm very sorry that they be under these situations, but they never should have been here in the first place.
Yeah, but they didn't ask to be brought here.
That's not our problem. Their parents knew what was legal and what was not. The parents should have done what they needed to do to file the proper papers to have their children here. Now, meanwhile, these kids have been here. They've been in school and everything else. That's our tax dollars. Have their parents been paying for all this, or have we?
Well, probably.
I work with people every day that are from foreign countries. I work in a hospital. These people all came here legally. It can be done. There's no reason for all this.
Well, there's always a reason. And the fact of the matter is that I guess, and you and I disagree. I mean, but I appreciate your point of view. I do. And I think you've stated what you feel, you know, very well. I thank you for the call. But I don't want to go after some, you know, 21-year-old kid who has, you know, graduated from college and is working towards being a doctor or an engineer or something in high tech. These are people. And that's, I think, how we have to look at this. You know, they were brought here as children. They didn't ask to be brought here, but they've been here. And for all intent and purposes, more than likely think of themselves as Americans. And I do believe the president has made the right move on this. 206-421-1000, we have a local line available. Steve, Lake Taps, you're up, buddy. Steve.
Yo, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm married to a Canadian citizen, and she's here on a green card, a permanent work visa. And so I have no problem with immigration. But people who come here illegally, okay, against the law of the land, breaking the law of the land is known as a crime. The person who does that is known as a criminal. Now, you know, I understand that I'm as far right as a lot of you guys are left, but right wing, left wing.
Are you telling me that I'm a left leaning kind of guy?
By me, Rush Limbaugh's a left winger. You're way past.
Well, but Steve, seriously, we're talking about. We're talking about individuals who were brought here as kids.
Legally, yes.
You know, do you really want to deport someone who's been here since they were 2 years old, has been and will continue to contribute to things here in this country? What is the point? What is the purpose? What would we gain by that?
What we would gain is pointing out that the law of the land must be followed. If you want to, now, I wouldn't have a problem with allowing those people to apply for visas through the same vehicle, through the same process that everybody else in Mexico has access to.
Well, and again.
Just handing them a get out of jail free card or a pass, I think is, you know, you guys talk about.
Let me ask you something, Steve, real quickly, and then I'm going to move on. Because this also includes people who have served in the U.S. military. So do you think...
And two of my sons served honorably in the Army. Okay. One's now on the Abe Lincoln in the Persian Gulf, and I'm proud as hell. And I appreciate those people's service. But they're here against the law of the land.
But don't, first of all, I'll tell you what I believe. I think if you serve in the U.S. military, that is automatic citizenship, period. I don't care how you got here or how your parents got here. If you
well, apparently Congress doesn't agree with
well,
you, though.
You know, well, I wish Congress agreed with me a lot more. Thanks, Steve. Good talking with
right.
you.
All
Look,
right.
I think that's a no-brainer right off the top. Somebody serves in the U.S. military, is putting their lives on the line for the United States of America, and then we say, well, sorry, you were brought here across the border. You were undocumented at 6 years old. You went to school here. You went to high school here. You worked here, and you served in the military, but we're not going to give you the opportunity to become a citizen. That is flat wrong in my book. Tyler, in Fife, you're up on Newsline PM. What do you say?
Hi. I had my great-grandfather came up from Mexico. He was an illegal immigrant. And when I was growing up, I had real mixed feelings on this until I got married to my wife, who is from Japan. And we moved over here, and it could have been real easy for us to do it illegally, but we went through the process.
And I don't mean to cut you off, Tyler, but I'm just running out of time here. I know where you're going. I know what you say. I had to do it. They should have to do it, too. The fact of the matter is that these people are being given an opportunity that I think is deserved. They've lived here all their lives, and I think it's worthwhile.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
I'll tell you what, there is a very, very poignant story in the Los Angeles Times. It's a great example of the type of person who is going to benefit by the president's decision today. It details a woman by the name of Maria Gomez, who is a UCLA graduate with a master's degree in architecture. She was brought here by her parents when she was 8 years old, always believing in the American dream while living in its shadow, as it's described, as an illegal immigrant. It is a very moving story, and it really does, in a very clear and precise way, address the type of person that President Obama thinks is deserving of not having to fear deportation after having lived in this country. She's 26 years old now, so she's lived in the United States for 18 years. Go to latimes.com, and the story is called An Immigrant in Limbo Between Two Americas. In a moment, we're going to go over the rally that took place yesterday in Occidental Park to bring back our Seattle Sonics.